everyone. You love the music, now be a part of the movement. Press Play is building a home for artists and fans just like you, and now you can help shape it. All you gotta do is go to pressplay.me and grab you some merch and wear it really loud and really proud, and of course, buy it for everybody you know. And know that you're helping musicians and music stay real, independent, and alive. And here's something really special. You can send a personal message to the artist of your choice. If we've done an interview with them, you have an opportunity to write them a note. You can write them a small message, or you can write them a whole letter, and it will go directly to them. Just click the link on any of our interviews, write from the heart, and let your voice be heard. So tune in, rock with us, and press play. Get the gear, send the love. Music lives when the fans do.
Everybody, welcome to Press Play Conversations. I'm the Don. I've got Tina here, the pretty one in the group. I am not. But the other handsome gentleman here is Buddy Joel. How you doing, Buddy?
I'm blessed, my friend. Thanks for asking.
Always, man. So, again, I want to bring up how, you know, you won Nashville Star. I think it was the inaugural a country contest that they had, and Miranda Lambert actually had to be on that. Ran was the runner up, right?
She actually came in third.
Third.
I pray for her every night. I ruined her career. I mean, look what I did.
Yeah. Yes, she did.
I think I tried too hard.
Yeah. Well, I bring it up because you won like overwhelmingly. It wasn't even close. You really did. And of course, you've got amazing songs, which we've talked to you about before. And we're excited about the new music, which we'll get to in a minute. But I wanted to ask you about, since then, there's been a plethora, like they said in Three Amigos, a plethora of music shows, contests, if you will, competitions. Do you think it's been good for music? Has it helped artists? I mean, in your case, did it feel like it helped you in your career? Was there any downside to it?
Just for me personally, I've been in Nashville for 10 years when the television show came along, and doing studio works. You know, I sang over a quick counting of 4,000 demos for songwriters and publishing companies, and I've been turned down by every major and minor label at least 2-3 times a piece. You know, so I think that if it hadn't been for the show, we definitely wouldn't be talking right now. So for me, it was a huge blessing. You know, I think, you know, and if you look back then, there were, I mean, just a handful of reality shows on, period. Yeah, I think Survivor, The Great Race, Big Brother, or whatever that thing was. They did Big Brother. You had American Idol the first year, but Kelly won that, right? And then the second year, Ruben stuttered, and that's the same year that Nashville Star came. So there's very, very few. I mean, obviously, I think it's been great exposure for tons of artists that may have never seen the light of day. So I think they're great, man. I don't get to watch them all. I don't have time to invest them. I've never even watched the full season of my show. You know,
no, so. I understand. You know, what's interesting though is a lot of artists don't want to win the contest. I think because some of the record deals or something they get locked into when they win, it's almost like.
Yeah, I can understand that. I mean, there were some things, not with the record label, but with the company that owned the show I was on, that we had to get straightened out, or there was going to be a public fight going on over stuff like publishing and things like that. And luckily, John Grady, who was the head of Sony Records at the time there, kind of went to bat for me and said, hey, you need to treat him right or you're not going to have a place to put your winner next year. And so I could certainly see, especially nowadays, you know, back then, record labels weren't doing these 360 deals where they got a piece of everything, you know, touring, merchandise, you name it. They're getting a piece of that now. At least that's what I hear. And back then, you know, that wasn't the case. It was still kind of the old days, I guess.
Yeah.
Old days. Explain to me the old days.
Well,
The old days?
I'm going to say pre-digital music, because we were right on the cusp of it when my second album came out. You know, they were having issues with pirating and all that good stuff, and not that that's going away.
The LimeWire days.
Yeah, but it was a really big deal then. The whole what was the one that was the biggest offender at the time?
Napster.
So anything pre-digital, I'm going to call the old days.
Which brings me to a point, and how do you feel about our post-digital age, streaming and that kind of thing? What has that done to you as an artist?
Well, I think that, if you're smart and you're good, with social media, I think it's a great friend to you. You've seen artists, break themselves that didn't have a bunch of money or a big machine behind them. And quite honestly, they didn't need it, obviously. So I think it's been a good thing.
That's the social aspect of it. But what about the streaming? Like, you go from selling merch and selling albums to selling per song.
Yeah, it is what it is. It's funny. The majority of my audience still wants to have a physical CD in their hands. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. In fact, when I work overseas, they're more into, I think kind of vinyl's been revived over there quite a bit. It doesn't bother me as much, but I really feel like if digital wasn't available, I'd be making more money because people would have, there's no way to pirate it and steal it. Well, there is. They can burn CDs all day long. Right. It's so easy to just download from the internet. That makes it even easier, So.
Yeah,
it just took longer. I mean, I did that. I had the dual cassette head thing and popped the playing cassette on the other side with my friend's tape.
Remember when we used to sit by our little boom boxes and wait for the radio station to play our song and push record?
Yeah.
And be mad because they were talking over the song?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So when your debut, when your album, right, went to number one and then gold the same year. Now we're talking about, we're just talking about streaming, but when you had the physical, I think there was something special, right, when physical copies hit a certain number. I seem to like a million streams is great to me, but when you sold 500,000 records versus a million streams, that felt so much more like real, right? Tangible, like somebody physically bought 500,000 copies of something.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I don't know what a million streams gets you nowadays. $7.95? A cheeseburger.
But a gold record did pretty well financially for somebody, right?
Yeah, I really don't know. But yeah, to have physically sold 500,000 or and we probably got really close to a million. They just quit producing them for that album.
Wow.
But anyway, yeah, that's to me, that's something really special, Mm-hmm.
That's so beautiful, man. And well, and then when you had songs like, for example, like Help, Pour Out the Rain, mm-hmm. which is such a beautiful song.
Thank you.
And, through your career of songs that you've done, can you tell me of one song that gave you the absolute goosebumps when you're in the studio or when you were writing it? One that had this almost out of body experience when you were done? Because there's songs that do that where they felt like they came from somewhere else.
Yeah. Help Pour Out the Rain was really special to me because it was essentially a true story about my daughter, who was three at the time, that asked me that question. The very first one was very special to me. Mm-hmm. There are songs that, were just album cuts that I felt like should have been, could have been singles or whatever. I did this song on my, on the first album called Why We Said Goodbye. I didn't realize at the time, but Tim McGraw had, I think it was on his Set the Circus Down or something like that album. But it was such a beautiful song, and the great, you know, just the lyrics that D. Vincent Williams, you know, wrote, and just the melody and everything. It was just like this perfect marriage that you dream about in a song. And I thought that Clint Black produced the first record, that the players and Clint just, you know, they really caught a special moment. So that song really sticks out to me.
Why We Said Goodbye, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I want to just see if you can hear this, because I wanted to play it for a minute.
All right.
You know, that's what I mean. I love when an artist will, because there's always those songs that either you create or are given to you that feel so special. And I love moments like this where I can just pull up a song. This is the great thing about technology, right?
Right.
I pull up a song.
I think back to when we were all like 16, 17, hanging out in each other's bedrooms playing.
That's exactly. Like buddies at the record player going, oh, wait, let me play you this song here. So here, can you hear it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I remember Sunday mornings walking on the beach, and that place we'd stop for breakfast with the old red vinyl seat. The hours of the tide chart, the way the sunlight danced upon your face. That antique roller coaster you just had to ride. I remember how you laughed at the terror in my eyes, the color and the detail. Just like it was yesterday. I remember how I broke down the night my father died. I didn't have to tell you, you just tell me while I cried. You sewn into the fabric the pieces of my life. I just can't remember why we said goodbye.
My God, is that a tearjerker song?
It still gets me. I mean, I felt the little shivers a couple of times there. I mean, I'm just 22 years old. You know, the song, the recording is, still gets me every time I hear it.
Wow.
Tina, what did you think when you heard that? What goes through you?
It makes me sad. I mean, I think we've all been to that place in our life where we're looking back and, you know, the what ifs and the could haves and all that kind of stuff. So just makes me sad.
And that piano. It's that piano. So yeah, like you play
piano. I mean, Buddy's voice is amazing.
Oh, yes.
So that doesn't hurt.
That too. Yeah. I love when you get lost in a song. I was listening to Chicago, If You Leave Me Now today.
Yeah.
And just Peter Cetera, the way he sings that, we've come too far to leave it all behind. And your voice does that in this song where you just feel the emotion when you hit the notes. Oh, what you live
That's
for.
Kind of, yeah, I appreciate that.
Oh my
God. Yeah, there's a little something, something that some singers have that I can't explain it, but some, I don't know exactly what it is, but some singers just have like this pitch, or there's this thing that is, it melts you. Like, do you guys understand what I'm saying?
Yes. Sure.
Not absolutely. All singers have it, but some singers do. It's
Buddy has it.
Yeah.
Buddy has it. Which leads me to something, Buddy, that's very special to me. Just because of the kind of, you know, obviously you have a Christian faith and you do a lot for people. Like you've done, performed and ministered to inmates, children's charities, toward war zones. You've been to what, Iraq, Kuwait, and Afghanistan? Did you actually go to those places? Wow.
Oh, yeah. We did. We were on the front lines. Yeah.
Wow.
What did you think about that? Like, how was that?
It was one of the high points of my career, really. I already had really deep appreciation for our military and our first responders and folks like that. But to go over there, and when I went at the time, my oldest son, Buddy, we call him B3, but he was 21, and it was like there was just this sea of buddies over there, because they all seemed to be about that age, you know, and to see how serious they took their jobs, how well trained they were and how determined they were, was just made me my respect and admiration for them grow even more. And it was a bit, I felt like it's a bigger blessing to me than it was to them, that I got to go and experience that with them. And, to be on the front lines, to get in those Blackhawks and fly for, an hour and a half out into the middle of nowhere to some little small forward operating base where you sit down and they say, look up there in those mountains, there's have artillery. And you go out and you see where this FOB has its, I guess our gun set up, its artillery shoot up into the mountains. And I mean, you're right there on the front of it. But just to get to experience that with them. And we did that for 2 weeks. I got to San Antonio at midnight on Christmas Eve coming back. And man, I'd go again in a heartbeat if I could. It was an incredible experience.
Wow. Was it scary at all?
It was. One of the bases came under attack as we were leaving it, actually. There was some mortars that came in. There was a really small forward operating base. They had some of the Pakistani army that was working with the Americans. I say working with the Americans. I know most of our guys didn't care for it. But we were all loading back into our vehicles. It was so small they couldn't land the helicopter inside the compound. So they brought out armored vehicles, picked us up at the helicopters, and then drove us into the compound. We did our show, and the guy that was the head of the USO that was with us and the commanding officer stuff said, get back in the same vehicle you got in to come in. And I happened to be in an armored ambulance with a couple of Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders, by the way. The guy was the head of the USO at that time. And we sat there for a little bit. And then this young soldier runs up because you load from the back and motions to the driver, the paramedic, to come out of the ambulance. And then the paramedic gets out. The driver closes the entrance from the back and takes off. And then he tells us over the comms, hey, the choppers are going to come in hot to get you guys. And we knew then there was something going on. And so he said, when I stop and open this door, grab your stuff. He didn't call it stuff. grab your stuff and run to the choppers. And we did. And when we took off and got out of there, then they came over the comms and told us that some of the soldiers we'd been entertaining had been injured. They had three mortar rounds come in.
Experience like inspire you to do any writing? Like, did any of your writing come out of that experience?
I've written a couple of things. In fact, one of them I'm really considering strongly putting on this new record called Spirit of America. I've got another one that my son Joshua reminded me I'd written several years ago called Keep My Soldier Safe, that I think applies there. And so I drew on my experiences and the stories that I'd heard from personally from guys and gals to write those songs. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, it made a really big impression on me.
Mm. There's anything that we need, it's connection, especially in the world that we live in today, which is exactly the reason why we created these cards, the Song Story Game. We sit and we talk to artists all the time about the stories behind the songs, the story behind the songs that they loved when they were growing up. And so we put together a game that you can own now and put it on your coffee table. And there's a few different ways you can play it. You can play it just as a conversation starter. You can play it with couples and besties for points, or you can play it in a team setting. Three different ways you can have a lot of fun talking about music. One of my favorite ways to play it is to actually answer the question, give a little detail, and then play the song. This game could go on for hours. It's entirely up to you, but get yours today at pressplay.me.
You know, Tina's son, what branch was your son in?
Army.
Is he still in the Army or is he out?
He is out now. Yeah, he spent his 4 years during COVID in Alaska training with, I don't remember the 11, I don't know, but the really special guys that are cold all the time.
Yeah. Well, yeah. For me and my family, please tell him, and for you too, thank you for his service and for yours too, because the family serves along with the soldier.
It was the toughest thing, probably one of the toughest things I've ever done, is let him go. That was really tough.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he can't really write to you every or call you every day, right? Like you.
No, once they go in, I mean, it's a little bit different. I also married a Marine, so it was much different back then. Like all you could do was write letters. Now they actually, every once in a while, they get to have a phone call, you know. They all go in with their cell phones and they get them a couple times. But yeah, I mean, it's a little better than it used to be, but it's still not easy when you know what could happen.
Yeah.
Bottom line. Right.
Well, again, like Buddy said, thank you, Tina, because I know that's not easy. And without him, you know, where would we be, especially in our climate today? So. Yes. I am appreciative as well. The new music you're working on, Buddy, let's talk about that, because we spent some time going back and talking about songs that impact you. Mm-hmm. Off this new music, you mentioned a song you might put on the record, but one that's going to be on it. Do you have a special memory of a song that's coming out on this record that you can share with?
Two of them in particular. And we were blessed back in 2023 in September to go do a 10-day tour in Ireland, and we got to see some amazing places. We stayed in castles and crazy places. That was just phenomenal. And it didn't rain the first drop until the very last day we were there, which is, you know, Ireland's kind of like Florida. It rains dang near every day, it seems like. But we were in Dublin visiting this palace, and it started raining, and my wife, Tanae, her two sisters, Marion and Michelle, were with us. And it started raining. And one of the girls, I think Marion, said, well, look at this. It's our last day in Dublin. It might as well rain. And I thought, wow, last day in Dublin, that sounds like a great story and idea. Mm-hmm. So I took that and I wrote it. And I'm really looking forward to getting that one out. And then I've been writing a lot with a couple of friends of mine, Charlie Allen and a guy named Johnny Garcia. Johnny is he's Trisha Yearwood's band leader, has been for 31 years, and worked with Garth for over 20 or whatever. And we've written a song, I think, that's really, really special, called Just A Lot Like Me, A Lot Like Me. So I think it's one of those. That song in particular, I think it's got a really interesting twist to it, and something that a lot of people have experienced that they didn't have an outlet for the emotion. And so
A Lot Like Me.
Huh?
A Lot Like Me is called?
A Lot Like Me, yeah.
Is it can I take a guess on the theme?
Sure.
Is it about a parent-child relationship?
Kinda. I mean,
A Lot Like Me. I mean, like, that's what I was thinking. Like,
it's
then there's a twist, so we're gonna have to wait.
I just wanted to see if I was close.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you off camera later.
Okay.
How about that?
I will take that.
All right.
I will take that. Now, how about Tina? Can you break out a song story before we wrap it up?
Yeah. Okay. So, buddy, we play a little game here called Song Story Game. Okay. And I'm going to go completely blind and I'm just going to pick something completely random, but it's a bunch of cards. So it kind of tells us a little bit about who you are. Okay. Through music. We didn't get to ask you. And before we go, I definitely want to ask you this. I'm interested in knowing who, well, there's a couple of different things, but who inspired you as a young person to want to play music?
Wow. My two of my dad's brothers taught me some of my first chords on the guitar. Interestingly enough, I started playing guitar because I heard Stairway to Heaven. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to play that guitar part. Little did I know how intricate that was going to be. Several years later, another cousin actually showed me how to play it. I was thrilled to death. But then, you know, and of course, and I grew up in the 70s. And so I was, you know, I was really into the singer songwriter types, you know, like, you know, Croce and John Denver and James Taylor and guys like that. Fogelberg. Do what now?
Dan Fogelberg.
Big time Dan Fogelberg. And so, I sang a lot. I sang those when I started singing out, but I really felt like that my singing, you know, listening to country music, because I'd grown up, my dad was a huge country music fan. And so from the time that I could literally, they would let me stack records on a record player, I was listening to, you know, stuff like Johnny Horton and Marty Robbins and Johnny Cash. My folks actually grew up with the Cash family in this little town called Dyess, Arkansas, where, you know, there was maybe 400 or 500 people that lived there then at the height of its popularity, you say it. But Dad was a huge country music fan. So I grew up listening to all that stuff. And I found that my voice lent itself probably better to that than anything else. And so that's kind of where I wound up falling in love with country music. And then when I was in college, I wasn't supposed to be in there because I wasn't old enough to be drinking, but no one else in there was either. We were in this little beer, literally a beer joint, a concrete block building that had a jukebox and a pool table. All they served was beer, and Alabama's Old Flame came on that jukebox.
I love that song.
And when I heard those harmonies, I just went, I mean, that just killed it for me. And so Alabama, Randy Owen, you know, is really one of the biggest inspirations to me. And those harmonies, just incredible music for those guys for, mm-hmm. you know, decades. And so give a lot of credit to those guys.
Ready, buddy?
Alabama song?
Favorite Alabama song, buddy.
My favorite Alabama song. Uh-huh. Well, it's either Old Flame or Lady Down on Love.
Oh, both great songs. Ready, buddy? There's an old flame burning in your eyes. The tears can't drown and makeup can't disguise. That old flame may not be stronger.
It's been burning longer.
Any spark I might
started in your eyes.
Oh.
Yeah. Keys.
All right. I've pulled its card. Ready? What music, so this could be a genre, an artist, or song, reminds you of your first love?
Oh, wow. England Dan and John Ford Coley.
Oh,
either I'd Really Love to See You Tonight or Sad to Belong.
What's the second one?
Sad to Belong to Someone Else When the Right One Comes Along.
I don't remember that one. Oh, I gotta look that up.
I gotta look that one up too.
It's really Sad to Belong.
I have that on my playlist. I love that song.
Yeah.
Which one?
I Really Love to See You Tonight.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm not talking about moving in, and I don't want to change your mind.
Well, it's sad to belong to someone else's. I think it's an incredible song. I actually got to meet John Forcoli and spend some time with him a year or two back, which is really cool.
God. Is there a song behind, is there a reason that those songs remind you of your first love?
Well, I mean, it's the song is Sad to Belong. You know, the guy is, he's already in a relationship or married or whatever. And then, you know, the right one comes along. And so, the way I take it, you know, he's going to be faithful to the one he's with, because that's the kind of guy he is. So he kind of, you know, that one of the lyrics says, so live my life in a dream world for the rest of my days.
Oh, I know this song.
Yeah.
All right. Hold on a minute. Here we go. Let's share in this moment together. I as soon as you hear it, you're like, oh yeah, I heard this on Yacht Rock.
I mean, it's so melancholy to me because my first love, it never worked out. It was one of those things that wasn't reciprocated. I was in love. Right. So, you know.
Don't you hate that?
Yes, it's sad to belong to someone else when the right one comes along.
Yep, I remember now.
I absolutely remember what I'm talking about. Sometimes you just got to hear it a little. You're like, oh, yeah.
I hear you, man.
Wow.
Thank you for that. Well, what? And I got one last one. All right. Want to know, buddy, what would shock us of a song that you love that you would never think in a million years anyone would think you'd love it? Like a guilty pleasure song,
possibly. Or a band or an artist.
Or a band.
Okay, Kiss. My first three concerts were Kiss concerts.
Yeah. Wow. What's your favorite Kiss song?
Kiss too.
Do what?
My first concert was Kiss 2. What version?
Oh my God! Well, no, I mean this is like the mid 70s, you know, and I got to see them for the first time at the Mid South Coliseum.
In all their glory of makeup.
Oh my God! Yeah, dude. Yeah. So you know, rock and roll all night. Strutter. The Destroyer album I like. Detroit Rock City.
That's one of my favorite dual guitar solos ever.
Did you get to see them like live in the past 5 or 6 years?
I have not.
Oh, they were fabulous. They were so good. Yeah, I saw them first in 1986, and it was the Crazy Nights tour.
Yeah,
they didn't have makeup then.
Such an underrated singer is Paul Stanley. To me, his vocals are so unique.
I saw him just a few years ago, and he's still up there shaking it. Oh, I'm like, you go, boy. Their shows are so good.
You know that song? You know that song, I Still Love You?
Mm-hmm.
I Still Love You. The way he sings that, you're like, oh, my God. Goosebumps up and down your arm.
That's it, guys. Buddy Joel likes Kiss.
Between the eyes. Wanna hear it loud. I love that song. That's Gene Simmons singing that one. All right. Well, thank you, buddy. Do you have an album title yet?
You know, I don't.
Ooh, can we name it?
I don't.
So we're gonna have to have him back as soon as he releases it.
Oh, I would love that. Yeah,
we need you back to go through the songs.
Yeah. But no, I don't have a title yet. I'm waiting for one of the songs to kind of say, yeah, this is what you should name the album after, you know.
Well, I am looking for, and what's the release date?
There is none because I am the record label and I'm also the janitor, the shipping department and everything else. So it's just I'm kind of piecing it together as I go. I'm hoping to have it out by early summer, something like that.
Nice.
Okay. Well, you've got so much great music that the anticipation's high for me to hear it, and then we'll bring you back and discuss it. But again, thank you, buddy, for taking the time out to be with us.
Oh, man, thanks for the free commercial for me. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're kidding? You're amazing. And thank you, everyone, for watching, and we'll be back again with another episode. Thank you, buddy Jewel. The moment was just a sound of emotion, and there's some stars that live on the river, chasing pipelines by the creek, kissing Gary Williams' sister on the porch on Louisiana, yellow rose of San Antonio, Arkansas, Mississippi. But I made it through the night, that's one in a row. La da 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 doo 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 doo. The moment was custom made to order. I was riding with my daughter on our way back from Monroe. And like children do, she started playing 20 questions. But I never would have guessed one could touch me to my soul. She said, Daddy, when we get to heaven, can I taste the Milky Way? Are we going there to visit, or are we going there to stay? Am I going to see my grandpa? Can I have a pair of wings? And do you think that God could use another angel to help pour out the rain?